In this episode of the Stamina Lab podcast, I spoke to Dr. Ben Levy. Dr. Levy is a psychologist specializing in evidence-informed methods to help people achieve their goals. And he works with businesses to assess and increase the likelihood of their teams achieving their priority objective. He's also a certified Tiny Habits and Thrive Global Coach, as am I. And this led us to talk about how to build the habits to consistently achieve your goals. We discussed his ABC Me model for success and how you can apply it immediately to help make anything you want to achieve easier. This episode is full of practical tools you can use today. I know you'll get a lot out of this conversation, so let's get started. Welcome to the newest episode of Stamina Lab, hosted by me, Glenn Lubert. If you're ready to upgrade your performance, achieve mental clarity, and improve your well-being, well, then you're in the right place. You'll hear the stories of professionals who have taken on big challenges while managing their energy and longevity through the ups and downs of pursuing their goals. Enjoy this episode, then head to the show notes to learn more so you can take the next steps to build the habits and systems you need to achieve your dreams. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Glenn. Lovely to be here.
So let's get started by talking about what makes a person consistently successful. How do you find success with your clients and in your experience, what are the ingredients for success?
Well, it's a great question to ask because I'm sure down the line we'll introduce the model I came up with that predicts how to be successful consistently. And that came about because I had met with so many people who were trying to achieve a particular goal. Some of them got there, some of them didn't quite get there, or some took quite a while to reach their goal. And so I started to spot themes amongst these groups and amongst these clients. And there are five particular elements, and I'm very happy if it makes sense to talk about some of those elements now or to perhaps isolate them if we talk about the model.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Because I think that's what constitutes success are these five elements. And when they are consistently applied, that's when you see success on a consistent basis. And so the model is called ABCME. ABCME. It's an acronym. And actually, fun little fact, I had a conversation with BJ Fogg two nights ago. Was it even last night? It took a while to get in touch with him, and he said he thought the model was really solid. He was really happy with it. He said there's no other model out there that does this, which is very exciting. We do have slight differences in how we define the A, so that's worth pointing out.
And BJ Fogg is Tiny Habits, the creator of Tiny Habits and Stanford's Behavior Change Lab, which we are both Tiny Habits coaches.
Yeah, and we'll probably come on to that. And really, if you haven't heard of BJ Fogg, what are you doing? I mean, he is absolutely, if you're interested in behavior change, success, habit formation, he really, really is at the center of that. He's, as Glenn says, professor of behavioral design at Stanford. Really top of the game. He's really looked at the research. So I was very, affirmed and validated by that. But the actual model itself, so A is ability. So clearly, anyone and everyone that I've met with who's achieved the goal had the underlying capability to achieve it. And that means things like they had the brain skills, the thinking skills, the thinking abilities to achieve the goal. Didn't mean they necessarily had all of the experience. They may need to have gained that experience or learn some of those thinking skills, but they had the underlying capability. Or if it was a physical goal they were trying to achieve, like a weight loss goal, that kind of thing, they had the physical capacity to be able to do those kind of things. So A was a kind of prerequisite. Consistent success also from B, and B we'll probably talk about a bit more during the conversation today. B is belief. It's known in the literature as self-efficacy. And belief is your ability, your belief in your ability to complete that particular goal. All the people who were successful and consistently successful, they showed a high degree of belief. They really felt they could do it. And I noticed I had a number of clients, and I used to work with young people as well, quite young with learning needs. And one of the biggest barriers they showed, you know, I can't forget this, is their lack of self-belief. They did not believe they could achieve the task put in front of them. Even when the teachers, the instructors knew that they could actually do it, they had the brain power. So belief is such a powerful, important predictor of success. C, clarity. The clearer my clients have been about what they're trying to achieve and how to go about it, the more likely they achieve it. And C might be the secret sauce to a lot of success. If you were to ask me on one foot, choose one thing that you should focus on with your clients, I would say focus on clarity. I do that first with my clients. I get them to define their goal in a sentence and be really crystal clear about what they're trying to achieve and then how they're going to achieve it, because that has all sorts of impacts, which again, we can refer back to. So that's A, B, C. M, have a guess, Glenn.
And me?
Well, because we're both tiny habits coaches, motivation. We both know that, right? So both BJ Fogg and I absolutely feel that at the center of a lot of this is ability, motivation. If you don't care, why bother starting? Why persist? It doesn't mean everything, but if you need to have a level of motivation, a level of energy towards your goal. And I actually ask my clients to come to me with a goal they're trying to achieve, not with just a problem, because I need them to come to me with a level of motivation to begin and do the work. It's quite tricky to up motivation on a consistent basis and to get someone to stay motivated. So I'd rather someone comes to me with a level of motivation. There are ways, but it's not as easy a dial to move in my experience. And then E is the final piece of the jigsaw. And I'll give you a clue, Glenn. If A is everything I already bring to the table to achieve this goal, this objective, this dream, what's E? E is the opposite. So what might E be?
It'd be everything else, your environment.
Environment, exactly so. Yeah. And I talk about that in terms of the physical environment and your psychological environment, which is always talked about in that way.
And also the environment is also the people around you too as well.
Exactly. So the people around me would be what I call the psychological environment. In other words, what are the attitudes? What are the perspectives that others take? What's the atmosphere and the culture like around me? Does it help me? Does it hinder me? And I've got a lovely example of that happened just today, actually. So I'm sure, again, we'll come on to conversations around the detail of these. But if you were to say to me, what leads to success? I'd say A, B, C, me. My clients always possess those five to a greater degree. And of all of those five, probably clarity has been the one that has been most present and has helped most.
Yeah, I had a friend really early on who said, you can have anything you want in the world, just be specific about it. Be very specific. The more specific you are, the more likely you are going to get what you
and
want.
It's so obvious in some ways, and yet it gets overlooked. Because if you're clear where you're trying to go, you can check in on yourself as well. Well, how far from this goal am I actually? And also you can be clear what your next step needs to be. You're going to be much more likely to know what to do next, which builds its own confidence. If I'm clear what I'm going to do next, I can make a judgment. Is that something I can do now or do I need help with it? But I'm likely to believe that I'm going to achieve that more. And that's also going to motivate me. If I believe I can do it more, I'm more up for doing something because I want to feel competent. Most of us want to feel competent, and clarity allows us to feel competent.
Do you strive to boost your energy, focus, creativity, and flow while keeping burnout at bay? Then Stamina Lab Sleep and Recovery Coaching Program is tailored just for you. At Stamina Lab, we believe sleep isn't just a nice to have. It's a sophisticated performance tool and the foundation for unparalleled daily energy and creativity. Through the fusion of behavior design, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, and nervous system management, we provide you with personalized, data-driven insights to construct lasting sleep habits and sleep confidence. Abandon the trial and error of self-guided apps and caffeine fixes. It's time to unlock a sharper mind, stronger body, and steadier emotional balance through expert one-on-one human coaching. Take the first step towards mastering the science and art of sleep and recovery. Download your free Sleep Interruptions Wake and Recovery Guide by visiting sleep.staminalab.io. Reshape your nights to transform your days. Embrace yourself for a remarkable journey to enhance cognitive function, resilience, and stamina at sleep.staminalab.io.
And I think there's something interesting about that clarity and the motivation combined there. That when lots of advice is, follow your passion, and a lot of times really people are like, okay, well, I can't figure out what my passion is, and the advice that I've heard too, which I really like, is more like when you are involved in something and you're getting really good about it, you develop a passion, and that those combine together with that motivation and clarity to help with that.
No, that's really great, because mastery, competence, that can breed motivation, extra energy. And I know at one point we might even talk about flow. It's not an area of expertise of mine, but you would certainly expect that someone who's developed a level of expertise, repeated possibly an activity over a period of time that they've enjoyed and engaged with, they can more likely enter to the flow state more readily.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
I'm also a magician, for example. I love magic. I'm already motivated by it. If I work on a particular shuffle that's, a magician works on, or a particular switch of a card, or a particular move that a magician knows of, and I get it right, and I get it just right, I haven't even noticed how many minutes and hours have passed from when I started practicing that to where I've then got to, because I'm so determined to achieve this, and I'm so clear the steps I need to take to practice it, to get it where it needs to go. I'm just there. So that's very much, I think, speaks to that, yeah.
So let's break down this this model, this ABC. Let's go to each one of these areas. So your ability, you talked about that a little bit, and so if you don't have the skills, is this something you have to start? You have to acquire the skills first.
It depends goal by goal. Every single objective is going to have its own demands, and each person who comes will have their own profile, their own ABC me profile. Now, clearly, if someone's starting with a very low level of A ability, you have to ask them, is it realistic that you're going to be able to achieve it, or achieve it in the time frame that you're expecting? Because you're likely to need to draw on a number of resources, either to address the gaps that you have or help you skill up, develop the experiences that you need to, whatever it might be. So, if I want to be the CEO of Tesco, is a big one, I guess Walmart equivalent in the UK is Tesco. Well, my A levels right now are very, very low. Now, I could do a crash course if I had the funds with a top CEO who works for a multinational with loads of franchising and so on to teach me how to go about becoming the owner of Tesco. It's still going to take me a heck of a long time. It's going to need a lot of resources. And there's a question mark about whether I'm going to get there in the time frame I want. I don't want to wait 10 years. I want to get it straight away. So I've got to align my goal to some degree with a realistic appraisal of what my abilities are. And one little point on that, Glenn, it's the one area when I ask people to rate themselves in each of these five areas. It's the one area I ask them, imagine someone else who knows you very, very well is rating you on your ability, because we don't always judge ourselves very accurately. Mm. We can certainly tell everyone what we believe we're going to do. That's our belief about our ability. We also need to know what our actual ability is. And the closest way to get to that without someone looking inside your brain is someone who knows you very well. What would they say? They know what you're trying to achieve. What would they say about your ability to achieve it right now? And it's only currently. It's not fixed in stone. It's where you are right now. All these things can move.
That's interesting. And in solution-focused coaching, which we do a lot in our programs, you're looking at one of the tools you use is to, if you're trying to get someone to move and change, what are they noticing about themselves? And sometimes you get stuck with not being able to notice changes yourself. So mm-hmm. you do that third party. Also, that third party question is what would someone else notice that would notice that you're moving that direction? And it gives you that.
Yes, like the miracle question is a wonderful example of that. Yeah. You wake up tomorrow morning and all your dreams have been answered. Your problem's been solved. What's the first thing that you notice? What's the first thing that other people notice that you're doing differently? And to be able to try and step outside of yourself, it's not an easy thing to do. We have so many biases that kind of get in the way of us honestly appraising what our actual ability is. What I would say, though, is it's not a deal breaker. Even with low levels of ability, you can certainly build them up. And it's worth, that's why coaching can be so helpful, is where you are skilling that person up and helping them build their ability levels, their experience maybe up as well in the area that they want to achieve. And remember, there's four other areas. If you're strong in the other four, then just focus on the A ability. That's cool. That's fine.
Right. Yeah. So if I wanted to be a Formula One driver, would you then, you know, obviously there's a lot of great skills that require for that. And probably couldn't do that, achieve that. Now, would you then look at that goal and say, well, okay, how can we still fulfill what that desire is in another way?
Yes. So my first session with clients who have it doesn't matter actually what the goal is, but often they have an ambitious goal, is I carry out a session, which is a why session. And I ask them, okay, this is your goal. You want to become, Glenn, a Formula One driver so that. And you'll tell me a few reasons why that might be.
Right.
And I'll ask you, what's the most important of those reasons? And you'll give me that reason. And I'll say, okay, so what might be, out of the top of your head, you know, Glenn, what might be a couple of reasons why you want to be a Formula One driver?
Okay, well, you get to drive fast. You get to travel around the world. You get to be involved with a lot of people that are performing at their best.
Great. You've given three different but very interesting reasons. So out of those three, which is the top of mind, which resonates most?
Probably working with people that really take performance seriously.
High performers. That kind of makes sense given the conversations that we've had. So you want to work with high performers so that?
So that I perform at my best.
Okay. And I want to perform at my best so that?
So that I can make an impact in the world. Yeah.
And we might carry on with that, and we might get to some deeper feelings as well. What are the feelings that lie under that need to have a big impact on the world? So quite quickly, we can get quite deep down into the real motivation here. And the goal becomes less relevant. Once we understand the really deep motivation, we can have a conversation about whether there's another goal that's more realistic, but touches on what you really need.
Ah, makes sense. Okay, so that's how you get get around that ability thing. Is you drop into motivation pretty quickly. That's one of the very first areas you start.
Yeah, I want to know what it's difficult because the word motivation can be used in different ways. I suppose what I'm saying, motivation is an energy towards, and it's also the deep lying need. So I want to get to your core motivation so that you keep the energy going towards whichever goal we end up choosing. And some people start with a level of energy and they don't necessarily know the deeper reasons why, but they already have that motivation. So you kind of call it motivation as a verb and then motivation as a noun, the motivation, like the capital M motivation would be that process as we go deeper and deeper to find your core motivation.
Yeah.
That you are motivated is the most important thing.
Do you go down the model ABC?
Not necessarily at all. I send a questionnaire out to individuals. So if I'm coaching an individual, they get a questionnaire where they get to rate their levels, and we get very targeted. So once I've come back with their results, I choose their lower scores, and they choose whichever one of their lower scores they want to work on, and that's what we work on. So it could be a low score. So my recent client had a very low score. Actually, it's interesting. Had a very low score on clarity of the goal. So he's in tech. He's doing some very interesting work now. He's starting with corporates to develop a model, actually to build habits in the, funnily enough, in those companies. But when he actually rated himself on his clarity of what he's trying to achieve at the end of all this, he was a 5 out of 10, which is low, right? So if you don't have a clarity about what you're trying to achieve at the end of it, motivation will start to drop. Belief will probably start to drop because you're not achieving what you want to because you don't know what it is you're trying to achieve. You can't be sure whether you have the ability and what other resources you need to draw on. So this is where we need to start with this guy. Others will have different profiles. I had a very low motivated person who came to me when they rated themselves. They were low motivation. I thought, well, if you've not got energy to achieve this goal, you're not really driven to achieve it. Why are you trying to achieve it? Who's this for? What's this for? And there are occasions, you know, when you're working in a company, you've been told you've got to do X. So the biggest motivation is because it makes someone else calm and enable me to stay in my job. that could be the motivation. So, but given that level of motivation, what do we want to achieve that's good enough? And then let's move on. Because you're not going to be wanting to stay at that level of motivation to do something you're not enjoying, you know, for a long period of time. So all right, each person has a different profile.
So we have, the ability, then there's belief. And belief is, you like says, is your self-efficacy that you can, yeah. You believe I can do this. What do you say is the biggest struggle people have in their belief area? So connected ability, like lack of skills, or?
Yeah, well, fundamentally, it's kind of binary. It's, do I believe I can achieve this thing, or do I believe I can't achieve this thing? Now, of course, there are shades of gray. So I think I could probably get some of the way there, or do it some way shoddily, but never really do it to the standard I want to. Or it will take much longer, or I'm going to need a lot more resources. It's not just going to be about me, because I'm really, which may not map onto what actually their abilities are and actually how the journey ends up looking. But I would say it's that can't do mentality is, and it's evidenced so well in the psychological literature. There's so much evidence about it. The can't do mentality is such a strong predictor of success or lack of success. And there's a, I think, is it Henry Ford maybe? Or there's a famous apocryphal quote from someone, you know, whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you're right.
Right.
Now, I have to say, a lot of these quotes, I enjoy reading them, but they kind of annoy me because they don't actually map on to what the research really says. A lot of it feels like nice. This is one which really does. So it really is the case that more often than not, if you believe you can, you find ways, means, resources, time, energy to achieve the goal. And if you believe you can't, we can talk about resilience, then you're much less likely to be resilient, quite simply, because you don't want to enter into territory that reaffirms that you're not very good. Remember I said earlier, we want to feel self-esteem. We want to feel competent in whichever area we're going into. So let's say I really want to achieve the Formula One goal, but I don't believe I can do it. Will I take the next step if it keeps telling me you're not going to be able to do this? Will I make the next phone call? Will I try and drive that car? If I feel in my heart of hearts, I'm going to crash that car. I'm not going to do the time that's needed to get to the next level. Probably not. I want to protect my sense of myself as competent. I don't want to keep being told I'm failing and reaffirm to myself that I can't get there. So my motivation will start dropping if I have a low self-efficacy. And if I believe I can't, then that becomes my reality.
And so belief is a bit of mindset.
Belief is absolutely mindset. It is absolutely mindset. And with all the attendant interventions that go with mindset that can help, you know, shifting the mindset from I can't to I can't yet is terrifically powerful. And when you team that up with clarity, I can't yet because you now have the next step that you know that needs to be taken on your journey. And you should now know more clearly, what do I need to do to get to that next step? So it's now not I can't, it's I can't yet because. There's a world of difference between I can't and I can't yet because.
So when someone comes to you and they rank themselves low on belief, what is your first steps you take with them?
Oh, great question.
Mindset to I can.
Yeah.
But
they often link up with clarity. So I want to look at the whole profile. I don't tend to look at one in isolation. I will look at the lowest score and then we'll look around that. Well, what else is going on that it's affecting or that's affecting that score? And low self-belief, unless that person has had a significant experience of failure in that area. Now, I told you before, I worked for many, many years and still do. In educational institutions, schools, they call them elementary in the States and secondaries and grad schools. And it's the same for kids as it is for adults. If you've had a persistent experience of failure, your self-efficacy, your belief in achieving the next task that comes along, of course, will be lower than the average. And that's how it should be. That's the evidence has proved to you that you can't do. So one of the things that's really important in that is to provide lots of early quick wins. How can I succeed in this and show myself that I can move forward? Again, how can I be clear what my steps are and who can help me get to the next step? And what's a realistic timescale and journey plan to get from here to there? So that's the way I tend to work with clients who have low self-efficacy. But unfortunately, when I'm working with adults, I haven't yet had someone coming to me with a motivated goal who's had super low self-efficacy, because I suspect that they've had enough of this success to kind of reasonably say, I'm energized and I'm going to pay someone to help me get to this goal. And I'm not going to throw my money away. I've got some feeling that I can get there. So I haven't had too much of the experience of super low self-efficacy.
So then, so you say it combines the clarity. And how do you, so clarity is understanding what you want to achieve. That's really the, you're defining success.
Define success and define the journey. Define, so what are the steps I need to take to get there and in what order? If you have those two things, I think we said at the beginning, what would be the one thing that really helps my clients succeed and those who are successful have succeeded? They've been clear on the goal and on the how. How they get there. I call it the what and the how.
And then do you adjust the goal if you know, if their ability or you know, belief is low, or how do you
Think of A and E as A is what I bring to the table,
yeah,
and E is what everyone else and everything else can bring to the table. We can do a nice dance between them. If I've got low ability to become currently to become a Formula One star, I might need to build up my experience. I might need to build up my network. So those are all competencies I need to build up my A. My E comes in. How do I draw on my environment to help me make those connections with people, get those experiences, get in touch with, in, you know, Formula One, same for you guys, get in touch with the right people who could start to give me that break. And I've seen the same in my personal career where, you know, when you start to feel down the doldrums, I can step back and go, well, hold on. Ultimately, I've got a goal. And there's the next step I need to take. I'm feeling low in confidence, but actually, if I think to myself, what are the resources I can draw on now to take me from here to my next step? I'm much less low about the whole thing because I'm not relying on myself or worrying about everything I can bring. There's almost always someone, somewhere, something that can help move us forward. And that's the way I help clients, and that's the way I think about things myself. Doesn't mean I don't get down from time to time. We always do. We all have those moments and moods.
And so that means your motivation is dropping at that moment. So you're
motivation can drop, mood can drop, you know, self-belief can drop levels there. Or a kind of recognition if you've hit a wall. That's a classic one. You've hit a wall and then you realize, hold on a minute, that's something I currently cannot do by myself. And either I'm going to need to invest in another course, I'm going to need to do some serious kind of learning on the job or whatever it might be. And there's that recognition and realization. I mean, I'm going to step back from this for a moment, Glenn. I haven't actually talked to anyone else. I've had a few podcast conversations already. I've had a lot of conversations with clients, professionals about the model. But I've never really talked to anyone about the helicopter view, the kind of philosophy that sits behind all of this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to share that now. But forgive me if it's a bit garbled because it's the first time I've shared it outside of my head.
Okay.
I want you to imagine every single goal is a dot, okay, on a piece of paper. It's a dot, and that's the destination. It can be an X or a dot, but that's your destination. And let's say somewhere else on the page is where you are now. You can be a circle. Glenn's the circle on the page, and the dot is the goal. Or the X is the goal. Everything ultimately is about making the straightest line between the circle, which is Glenn, and the dot, which is the destination. Everything else is irrelevant. And when I kind of realized that, it was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, because there's a lot of conversation in popular culture about how we are challenged by our past. We have hang-ups, we have, you know, kind of small d depressive feelings, not clinically, but small d. We have issues with our self-image, we have all sorts of concerns, but actually all we're trying to do is get from where we are now in the straightest possible line to where we need to get to. And that is going to require a series of actions taken in sequence until that goal is reached. And it's actually totally unemotional. And when I get really, really down, I remind myself, I might be getting down, but I'm just getting in my own way. Because there will still be those set of actions out there, inevitably, that will take me in the straightest possible line. And that's all I really need to aim for to get to my goal.
And that's interesting, because I think about that, you know, it's basically performance and, you know how you're performing. And I think about it in terms of athletic performance. I'm a runner, and you know, especially doing long distance running races where, you know, your motivation is exhausted, and now you're still running. And the concept I use is to just not to allow any negative thoughts to, you know, when you start thinking, oh, I'm tired, my legs hurt, or it's just so much longer, or how I'm only this far in. And I'm like, okay, that thought isn't serving you or helping you at any moment, right at this moment. So even I was in a really long race tonight, I could tell on the third leg of the race I was in, I was looking at my watch. I'm like, oh, my pace is a little bit off of what I need. And so I like, oh, you need to just stop looking at your watch, because now looking at your watch is impacting that, giving me negative thoughts there. So
that's great.
Getting rid of all the negative thoughts. Yeah.
You're exactly on the same territory. The language I'm slightly shifting it to, I suppose, is moving it away from personal psychological language to very pragmatic action-based language. So for example, when you're checking your time, your current time elapsed, and you're saying, oh gosh, that's a problem. What you can also say is, there's a line between where I am now and getting the time that I want. This action has taken me on a line away from the line that I need to be on. To get back on that line, that fastest path to my destination, I need to cut that out. You're basically being fairly ruthless.
Right.
If you really want to achieve your goal, you've got to be emotional, right? Emotional. That's the fastest way to achieve your goal. It's indisputable. It's just logical, right? Now, you can harness your psychology to help you move on that line faster. That's great. That's a rational decision. You said, look, you know, I'm someone who's really bloody minded, and I'm someone who enjoys this area. So I'm going to go on this line much, much faster. I talked to you about magic. I'm going to want to become even better at this card trick. And I know I can do card tricks. I'm interested in doing card tricks, so I can run down that line. That's going to speed me up. But as soon as I drop a card, if that doesn't matter to the trick, keep on shuffling, keep on moving, because that's irrelevant to my target. So I'm laser focused on the target, and that's the way to get to my goal. I can notice my emotions. It's a bit like if we bring mindfulness into this. One of the reasons why mindfulness is so powerful, when you notice your feelings and you separate yourself from them, you can focus on the reality of where you are now. And if you attach that to where you want to get to, you can be much calmer and focused on the goal, because you're allowing those feelings to step away a little bit, see the vista, and focus on the vista. And that's really, I think, where it ties in with some of these psychological concepts and these therapeutic approaches, is really thinking about it just in terms of bottom line is a line. And there'll be lots of different ways of getting from the circle of Glen to the dot of the destination. Some will be a slightly bent line, which is realistically 99% of the way we achieve a goal. Very few of us do that. But let's get as close as we can to a straight line. What we don't want is a wiggly line that goes here, there, and everywhere, because we're checking our watch. We're thinking about whether or not we care anymore. That's just getting in the way of getting to the destination we set ourselves. Get back on that line.
So ability, belief, clarity is getting to that. Is that dot that we're just defining and clearing the dot now?
Yeah, clarity is drawing the dot as clearly and as viscerally and as visually, you know, as possible. Literally, you know, I get my clients to draw their goal.
Draw their goals and to describe every detail that they can in that moment with it, what they feel like. And
we get quite solution focused about it, as you sort of thought, because that really helps to build the picture.
Yeah.
You know, let's imagine you've woken up and you've achieved your goal. What do you see? What do other people see? Imagine there's a camera. That's a nice one. That's watching you. What does it see you do? And then very importantly, I also build in, what do you think? What do you feel? You've achieved it. You've got there. Because that will help with the motivation. When you can clarify what you're thinking and feeling when you've won, when you've achieved it, you build that into your motivation. When you've won, Glenn, the Formula One prize, you are now the leading racing driver in the world. You've got that goal. What are you thinking? What are you feeeling?
Yeah. And so I'm standing on the podium, taking in all the adoration, thinking of, you know, I'm finally here at this moment. All my goals achieved. The team that helped me do this is so happy I was able to put that together. It can viscerally start to, I hadn't actually visualized that before. I use this as an example because it's something I can't achieve.
How are you feeling, Glenn? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling like at the peak of my existence.
So that is your core. That's going to link to your core. I want to get to the feeling of being at my absolute best, feeling at my peak. So that's what's going to keep driving me to stay on that straight line.
Yeah, it's interesting you do that too as well, because, you know, as we talk about BJ Fogg, and you know, his famous line is, you know, emotions create habits. And so that, you know, that helps create that emotion in you to help build all the habits that follow.
And again, you're harnessing emotions, psychology to keep you going, moving fast. That's when it's really useful. It's when emotions and self-reflection and rumination, they're not helpful emotions. They're not helpful states of mind, guilt, regret, procrastination. They're just getting in the way of us moving on the journey. So we harness our psychology to help accelerate the train to its destination, and we try and notice and leave out anything that's getting in the way. So yeah, this is where I want to get to, and these are my feelings. Purpose, focus, celebration is where it's all at for me. When you've done something and you celebrate in a way that links to what your real purpose was, what am I really going to get from this?
So this is fantastic. So that goes into motivation, and motivation, you talk about in two different ways here. So when you're doing this in the model, the motivation is the why you're doing it. And we just discussed the motivation in a way, in a sense of to propel you forward. And so there's two different types of motivation. But
yeah, and one can feed into the other. You know, if you want to feel like you're at the peak of your powers and you want to feel like you're as competent as you've ever been, that can absolutely be a driver that, we know they still can go in waves. So you can't use just that. There'll be days where you wake up and you're like, God, there's such a way to go to get to that feeling that I really, really wanted. So then you have
I felt that way, that I would realize with my mindfulness, hey, that thought's not helping me. And ruthlessly cut that out of my,
Right. So using it when it's most helpful to use. And then you've got micro motivators, you know, beginning of the day, and routines and habits, which is absolutely on the territory where BJ Fogg is, and such respect so much that approach and value it so much, because when all else fails, I've got a habit that means I don't have to think much and I'm still moving the dial. And you absolutely want to be there. Routines and habits to keep you moving on the journey, and micro kind of motivators as well. What are little things that either I can celebrate after, or are going to give me a good feeling in the lead up? Oh yeah, I'm excited to do that. If you can enjoy the journey, inevitably you're going to get there faster. It's something I've been reflecting on recently.
Yeah. Now, so then finally, the last category is environment. And so environment, this is also the not just the physical spaces we're in. Obviously, it's the digital spaces we're in. It's the people that are around us. Does that sum up your definition?
Yeah, interesting you brought in digital spaces. I hadn't really conceived of it in that way. I split them as physical, which probably incorporates digital, and psychological, which is attitudes, feelings, culture, atmosphere.
Psychological, got it. That's the people part of it. Yeah. So, I mean, I bring that up with digital because, you know, with my partner, Dr. Deb Teplo, we have a behavior design model too. And then environment, I bring that up a lot, because the digital part of it, because we, especially when you're young, with the younger and then younger group of that is that they spend a lot of time in the digital environment, and especially mm-hmm. if your kids, their schooling exists, you know, partly that social environment is all digital environment. Mm-hmm. So like the places you go on the internet and the places you hang out, has a tremendous impact on you.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I suppose, you know, within the physical, I would include anything that touches our senses. So if you're seeing something on a screen and it's making you feel some way, you've had a physical stimulus that's given you an emotion. It's given you a psychological impact. So an emotional impact. So that's kind of just the way of more sort of, but then within that, as you say, you could separate into two. And then within those two, you've got what's in the physical space, what's in the psychological space, and what's the overlap. So just trying to think on my feet here, but you know, I would make the strong claim that a psychological environment can impact a physical one and vice versa. For example, I've got a relatively small room here. If it was even smaller, I might start to get a bit stressed about things, to find spaces to put things. So my physical space has made it harder for me to work, and that's also made me feel a certain way. So my physical space has impacted me psychologically.
Got it.
And I'm guessing, you know, it certainly would work. It does work the other way, doesn't it? You know, if you maybe, for example, my family turn around to me and they say, do you know what, you cannot keep doing this anymore, right? These interviews, they're taking too long. They're taking out family time. You know, what are you doing? My physical space is going to change quite significantly. I might have to shut down the my timing's changed and so on. So suddenly it's having a physical and practical impact on my environment and what happens to me. So I think in both directions, there's a lot of interplay between them, but it's worth thinking about each of them in isolation and what's going on with each of them.
So how do you coach then when someone with the environment?
As you know, from BJ Fogg stuff, environment is so crucial. You know, just shifting the environment slightly can make the biggest difference to outcomes. So not just for habits, but for goals. So if I were my own client, and I've had clients, you know, talk to me about, I was working with a group of actually entertainers, and they had a real challenge because their family were saying to them, you should no longer pursue the career. You're not going to be good enough for it, which obviously has an impact on their self-efficacy, their belief.
Yeah.
And so the question was, well, what do we do about this? And so my response was, that's an impact of the psychology of your environment, the psychological environment on you and whether you're going to achieve. Take those voices, much like we take voices in our head, and I talked about mindfulness, step away from them. Take those voices and step away and analyze them. Are the things that are being told to you helping you on your journey or getting in the way? If they're helping you on the journey, incorporate them and work out what practically you can do as a result of the advice you've just got. If they're getting in the way, recognize there's some emotion behind them and there's some feelings and it's actually family. So that's always a bit trickier. However, notice that they're not actually moving you on that line to your destination. So park them. You can even write them down, put a cross through that sentence, which represents what they said to you, which is, you're not going to be able to make it. That's not actually helping my self-efficacy. It's not moving me on. And you've parked it. So that's from a psychological perspective. Physically, you know, where's the nearest space you can move to? Where's it warmer? Where's it cooler? Where are your senses going to be best treated? Where's the space that you need? And, you know, opening up that conversation, we're such creatures of habit, human beings, right? And we just assume what we do tomorrow is going to be a continuation of what we did today and there's no alternative. Just the act of pointing out, when they've done the ratings and they show to me that they've got a low score in their physical environment, that itself is an intervention. They're like, I never thought about that. I never thought that I could move room as simple as that and change my home office or just get rid of that massive thing that's in my way that's all the time flashing. Actually, that's just super distracting. And why the hell have I still got it? It's not serving enough of a purpose. Those kind of conversations don't always happen internally until someone spots it for you, you know?
Yeah, there's an interesting thing I'm sure you're familiar with, which is the cathedral effect of is when your nervous system. We had Johnny Miller on previously talking about your nervous system and nervous system management, and how much managing your nervous system. It's kind of the environment. It's similar to the environment. It impacts all these different things in the model here, and that if you are in a high ceiling room in the cathedral, your nervous system expands to that room. You can have much more creative, expansive thoughts. And if you need to focus down and have some focused thoughts, you bring it into a lower ceiling environment. You can replicate this with a brimmed hat that can do it, or the horses wear those blinders on the side. It's similar to that cathedral effect by bringing it. So if you do focused work, you want to stay in that tight.
That's really fascinating. I know that you may have heard of Emily Balsettis, who does a lot of work on visualization and how that impacts on goals, and how the nervous system and the visual system have such a practical, direct impact on our actions and our feelings. And if you visualize the goal in an extremely rich way, and depending on how you visualize the goal, adds to your likeliness as to whether or not you achieve it and in what way you achieve it. So the visual system is apparently very, very powerful. I listened to a podcast recently, Andrew Huberman.
Yeah, definitely.
And he says that basically the eyeballs are protrusions of the nervous system.
Yeah.
And essentially it's sort of the brain popping out in two spaces. So really we're just thinking about it as part of the brain, and the information coming into there having such an impact on our thoughts and therefore subsequently on our actions is such an interesting idea, which I hadn't really considered before. But we do use visual language so much in, visual words, and I see that, I recognize this, I could foresee, I anticipate, all these kind of words are really visually based, because I think so much thinking happens in relation to the eyes.
So we were both Tiny Habits coaches and Thrive Global coaches, similar to the programs there. They have, Tiny Habits or micro habits, I think they're called, for Thrive. And so is it making these small habits? How do you use these methodologies to help set your clients up for success?
That's a great question. I mean, it's a tricky one, because it's important, I think, certainly with the Thrive approach, there's a particularly prescriptive approach, which is very strongly evidence-based. And following that path, there are many, many roads that can lead to Rome. And that's a really powerful way of helping clients reach their goals. And it's designed in a particular way for clients with particular needs. I think with the Tiny Habits approach, I'll give you one practical example of how I incorporate Tiny Habits into my coaching. So with my clients, some of their goals are step-by-step to the final destination, with not that many habits required. But most, I would say, many to most of my clients come with goals that require a combination. So I think I mentioned in passing earlier, one of my clients who had a weight loss goal by a certain date. So for him, there were a series of one-off activities he needed to carry out, set up the gym membership, arrange clothing and so on. And then he had a number of habit-based behaviors, inevitably, with a health, a healthcare target goal. Repetitions of things, mornings. So we had to work on that using Tiny Habits. However, the way I really enjoyed using it and incorporating it with my model was we come up with a very detailed plan of action. What are you going to do tomorrow? With who? How? When? By when? Where? And they detail everything. And the client details those actions, carries them out, and they go down a series of steps on their way to the first step to success. These require charts on the wall so you can chart your progress. But how do you remember to check your chart? Tiny Habits. So I work with my clients and I teach them how to build a habit of checking their chart first thing in the morning or first thing in the afternoon when they've got an anchor moment, something they reliably do that they can build on. They hook it on to the checking of the chart. They celebrate and then they crack on. So then they build the habit of actually staying with the plan.
And the anchor moment is something, it's just in the morning, it's like getting your coffee or...
My last client was putting his coffee down at the desk.
Yeah.
I was like, you put your coffee down and you check your next action. and then you celebrate. And this was the harder one. I think it doesn't always come intuitively, is celebrate. Whatever that might look like, you know, meditate on it for a moment. As I say, purpose focused is a big one for me. Link it to what you're ultimately trying to feel and achieve. But give yourself that moment to recognize that you have done something that's worthwhile and make yourself feel good about it, because you're more likely to do the habit again tomorrow. And then we'll start seeing that you'll follow the plan much more reliably.
So in my instance, after I set my case tea, not coffee, but set my tea down, I would check off the calendar or check off the checklist, whatever the list was.
It could be check off or it could be check it. In other words, take a look at what your next action is, celebrate that you remembered to look at what your next action is, and then probably get on with that action.
And my celebration, I could visualize that moment standing on the podium in my formal.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting one, because as long as it's authentic, you know, we talked about in different cultures in the UK, people going, woohoo, look at me. It's just not in the culture, right?
Right.
So maybe a quiet moment of recognition and really affirming that this is an action that has moved the dial for me. As long as it provides that moment in time, I think, you know, BJ talks about in the book, you are wiring the brain. You're rewiring the brain to learn that these behaviors are beneficial, they're enjoyable, let's do it again tomorrow.
So when there's a setback, on someone trying to reach their goals, how do you work with your clients on setbacks and just developing the resilience to keep coming back stronger?
Yeah, so the resilience piece, that's a very interesting one. I mean, that could be a whole kind of podcast itself. So, of course, I mean, thinking about sticking with the plan, let's follow that thought through. You know, I didn't stick with the plan. I'm now off track. I'm weeks away from where I expected myself to be on my steps to success. You know, kind of what do I do next? Very often, this is kind of solution focused, but I bounce it back. What would you need to do next? I want to build resourcefulness. Resourcefulness underlies resilience. What is it can I do? How do I get myself back on track? And what is it that's got in the way? Now, we always have competing motivations. It might be that something else at this point in time is really prioritized. That's fine. So what's a smaller version of the habit you could do that you can still stick with? And is this really meaningful enough for you to keep consistently going for it? That's a question that sometimes I need to ask clients, where perhaps their level of motivation wasn't quite as high as they thought it was to achieve this particular goal. More often than not, I would say it's an issue of something else has just got in the way. They're clear what they can do next to get back on the wagon because they've understood the principles. Now we've worked on the clarity piece. What's my goal? What are my steps? I can see which step I've got stuck at. So I know more clearly what is likely to be needed to get me there. It might just be me getting back on the wagon, getting back on my desk, getting back into that email and, you know, taking that action. It could be as simple as that.
Yeah, I think that goes back to the experimenter's mindset that we like to talk about, which is, you know, there's no failure. It's just new information for the next experiment. So you're bringing back that, I know what's causing me to do this not work, and we get back to do something.
That's actually lovely, because I think that would link very nicely to the sort of philosophy I introduced here about being emotional, kind of stepping away from the emotions and recognizing we're on a journey. So similarly, when there's a setback, we're stepping away from the regret and the frustration and the annoyance and the, oh, it's confirming something about me. And we're going, what's it taught me? What's the information that I've got from that that can keep me going on that line as quickly as possible to my destiny? I think they link quite nicely, actually.
How does optimism come to aid and predict success?
Well, if I was an expert in the literature in that, I would be able to give you an answer very quickly. But my understanding from experience and kind of, you know, what I've learned over the years, more from a practical perspective, is if you have an optimistic bias, certainly in the field you're trying to achieve, you're much more likely to. It's kind of that self-efficacy belief thing. It's like, this is likely to happen. We're likely to get there. But remember, there isn't a blanket. I'm a state person, not a trait person. So what do I mean by that? I don't buy into personality tests. I don't buy into labels, unless they're medical labels. I do buy into states. So some people are in a certain state, in a certain context, at a certain point in time. And you may be feeling optimistic about your ability to achieve Formula One at this point in your life because certain experiences have come to you before then that put you in that position. It could go in either direction. You can get more optimistic with more evidence that you can succeed, or you can drop your optimism because you start to hit loads of failure points. And I think really that's what accounts for most of optimism. It doesn't just come inbred and inbuilt. There are experiences that we take in certain contexts that tell us a story about whether we can achieve something or not.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And is interesting because it is tied pretty much to belief there in your model. And you know, you could be like the state being a state set,
you know, it's quite countercultural, a lot of the stuff that I'm covering today, Glenn.
Yeah.
There's an assumption in our culture that people have a set IQ, they have a set personality, they have a set way of thinking and being. I'm not convinced by that. I've not seen that. And I'm not in the game to reaffirm people's belief about what they believe. I'm here to shift and to move people forward and to recognize there's a goal, there's where you are. Let's get you there.
So you've mentioned your magic, performing magic a few times in here. I was curious how those skills come into play in your work.
Not as much as I'd like them to, truthfully, but they have reminded me of how easy it is for people to have a narrative that is not what's really going on. I think that's fundamentally one of the biggest overlaps. On a practical level, I've done some training to help people understand ABC me using a magic trick, which is always fun. So that's another application where I actually have a card trick that I present. I don't explain how it's done, and I get people right at the beginning to rate their levels of A, B, C, me. And then when I start to teach it to them, start to see how those levels shift. And you see how the belief levels go up because they start to be clear about how to achieve this because I'm explaining the steps. And then motivation level goes up, of course, because it's like, wow, I could do this magic trick too.
Well, that's great. If you could give one piece of advice to a person who's just, you know, is really wanting to, you know, just wanting to succeed at something and they're, you know, just starting off on that, what would it be?
What a great question. Goodness me. It's so hard as a psychologist to have a one size fits all answer because my instinct is like, I want to meet this guy or girl. You know, I want to know more about them and where they've come from and where they are right now and what their goal is and what their why is and all the stuff that we've discussed today. But if I had to give one piece of advice, I think you probably know the answer to this given what we said so much.
Well, I would guess that maybe perhaps it'd be to really look at define your why, what motivates you.
Define your why would be important, but I would almost get them first and foremost
to visualize and believe it.
Write your goal in one sentence. It's one of the simplest and most powerful interventions. Write your goal in one sentence. Does it make sense to you? Does it make sense to someone you know? And does it make sense to someone you don't know? Can they understand what it is you're trying to achieve? So to make sure you can understand what you're trying to achieve. And everything starts. My favorite phrase is probably start at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the most profound thing I know. And it's not, I think, a phrase that I've come up, I'm sure, but start at the end.
It gives
what should the end look like? Everything goes from there.
That's fantastic. I think great place for us to wrap up. Ben, if someone wants to reach out to you and contact you, how would you recommend they connect with you?
Sure. So my email address is Ben, that's me, at makeit, which is MAKEIT, hyphen, that's the kind of dash thing I think in the States, makeit-happen.co.uk, because I'm based in the UK. And the website is www.makeit-happen.co.uk. I've got a free slide deck, actually, which you can access, which summarizes my ABC me model. And you go on the website, makeit-happen.co.uk, and you go onto five keys, because it's the five keys to getting anything done. Go on to Five Keys, sign up, and you'll get the free PDF plus a free webinar where I go through in much more detail the whole model. And you can do an exercise with a goal that you're trying to achieve and work out where your dips are and what you can do next about it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm definitely going to go back through my goals and run through the ABC Me model myself and start with the end in mind there.
Lovely.
All right. Thank you, Ben, for taking time for being on the show.
Real pleasure, Glenn. Lovely seeing you.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. Any information about this week's guest can be found in the show notes, along with other resources for upgrading your own performance and enhancing your well-being. Lastly, if you want to join the Stamina Lab community, head on over to staminalab.io. Until next time, be well.